A body on the train tracks in mysterious circumstances.
Mark's been found on railway tracks.
An award-winning ABC podcast and a fresh inquest underway.
Every time we walk out of that inquest, just being like, oh my God.
You weren't out there on the train tracks that night?
Absolutely not.
As the answers get closer, the podcast is back.
He said he's guilty. He's guilty as sin.
Search for Unravel Blood on the Tracks. It's on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
His toe, the big toe on the left foot, was actually cut off.
So I do wonder why the toe out of all places.
Yeah, because you wouldn't really go for the toe to kill someone, would you?
Mm. Hello, my friend. Today, something a bit different for you. Last week on Assassins, we told you the story of Ramses III, a warrior pharaoh who ruled over ancient Egypt for 30 years and whose death was an ancient murder mystery. For 3,000 years, no one could prove exactly what killed Ramses III. Ancient documents whispered of a conspiracy against the pharaoh, but there was no smoking gun, not even a bloody dagger. For centuries, people tried to figure out how he died, with no luck. But then, in 2012, one of history's coldest cases was finally solved, all thanks to science. Today, we're taking a deep dive into how modern science helped solve that ancient mystery and others like it. And who better to guide us on this journey than science journalist Maddie Massey. Now, you probably recognize Maddie from her excellent TikTok and Instagram accounts, but you might not know that in a past life, Maddie was involved in ancient DNA research, where she had to extract DNA from ancient remains and try to piece together mysteries from the past. The perfect guest for today's episode. Maddie, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So the first step in solving any murder mystery is finding the body. But the remains of Ramses III were a little unusual, right?
Very unusual.
Now, why don't you explain what was so unusual about these remains?
Well, the first weird thing is that the story starts with a goat in 1871.
Okay.
So the goat was just walking along in the desert in the middle of nowhere, minding its own business, and it fell down a hole. And the shepherd who was minding the goat followed the goat down the hole and found this chamber filled with dusty sarcophagi containing at least 40 mummies and 11 pharaohs. Yeah.
11?
Yeah.
And this is where Ramses III was found.
That's right. So we think that ancient Egyptian priests moved the bodies from their original resting places into this hiding space to protect them from robbers and looters.
And Egyptologists in the future, am
yes.
I right?
Yes, pretty much. But it was the shepherd who found them originally, and it was kind of funny. He thought to himself, Egyptology is really popular right now, and maybe I can make a bit of money out of this. So for the better part of a decade, he kept the location a secret, and he slowly sold off bits and pieces of the royal cash, as it became later known. And he would sell these things on the black market, and some of the pieces caught the eye of a French Egyptologist. And this guy was begging the shepherd, please reveal the location of this secret mummy cache.
Mm-hmm.
And the shepherd was like, no, 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 until 1881, when the Egyptian authorities got involved. Because of the shepherd's involvement with the illegal antiquities trade, they interrogated him about where these mummies were and eventually got the answer.
So he made no bank.
Well, he did make bank for a while, but then he got interrogated. I don't know what was involved. I don't know if he had to give the money up, but he got interrogated.
Okay. So this is a 3,000-year-old mystery, and we have clear, you know, evidence of this man being now slashed through the throat. His parts of his body have been cut off, right?
That's right.
I just want to know, why did it remain a mystery for 3,000 years? Why did it take us 2012 till we actually figure this out?
Well, there were brutal wounds on the body of Ramses III, but these were hidden from sight for thousands of years until very recently, right? And so there was a cut across the neck, and then there was also a toe that was missing. And these were hidden because they had really thick resin coating those parts of the bodies. And resin is that sort of hard black substance that surrounds the body of the mummy. And then the bandages were very thick at those sites. And Ramses even had this linen collar wrapped around his neck, which you can see in photos, and that made sure that the wounds were hidden from sight.
Ah. Now, that reminds me, you just mentioned he has linen wrapped around his neck. During that time period, during the 1800s, unwrapping mummies was sort of a social culture, right? Was it sort of a culture?
Things were different back then. Mm. Yeah. I would say nowadays it's seen as kind of disrespectful to disturb the dead.
Mm.
And also from a scientific perspective, it's better to let these remains lie as much as possible, because future generations who have better technologies than we do can then study them and get more information than we could, right? But back in Victorian era Britain, things were a little bit different. There was a little bit less respect floating around. And mummy unwrapping parties were this huge thing. It was like a hot ticket item. Like if you got an invite to one of those, that was like the next, like the best thing ever. And so they'd have them at like people's homes or theatres or scientific societies.
Too bad this was in the 1800s. Imagine if this was a modern thing in Australia. We'd have like what we'd probably call a wrapping party, something like the wrapper. All the lads sitting around in white plastic chairs unwrapping a mummy to get a bit of that vitality.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that's they were trying to, I think, capture some sort of essence of the past.
Mm-hmm.
And what they would do is they'd all sit around a table where the mummy was left, and then they'd unwrap it slowly layer by layer, and they'd reveal amulets, and then they'd finally get to the body underneath.
Right.
But, you know, that's pretty disrespectful. It gets even worse. So in the 16th and 17th century in Europe, they would actually eat mummies.
Oh, my God. We're talking about cannibalism.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I know. So it was kind of crazy. It was this thing called mumia, which was a powdered preparation of mummy, and it would contain that resin.
I've heard about this. It's the name mumia itself is derived from a Persian word meaning asphalt or something, right?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm actually so glad you mentioned this.
I love etymology.
Yeah. Okay. Me too. Yeah. Couple of nerds right here. So in Islamic medicine, they would have this mumia, which was this naturally occurring pitch asphalt substance.
Mm.
And so it was like this hard black stuff that they would put on wounds, rashes, everything. And they would use that as a bit of a cure-all for all illnesses.
Oh.
Yes. And then European scholars in the sort of medieval era, they were reading about this and they kind of misinterpreted the word mumia to be related to mummy.
Mm.
And they thought that this remedy was actually from mummies from Egypt.
Ah.
So then they recommended that people should start eating powdered mummy, and they started selling them in apothecary shops, and merchants started pushing it, and it became this whole industry.
I've seen photos of Ramses III's face. I'm curious to know, was his face unwrapped when they found him? And if so, how did they miss all of these signs that this was, in fact, a murder?
Well, good question. So people did try to unwrap Ramses III and they got part of the way there. But I think I mentioned before that at the neck and also around the toe, the resin was really thick and the bandages were really thick.
Mm.
So if they tried to unwrap those areas, it would have broken up the mummy and damaged the mummy too much.
Right.
So it was actually very, very fortunate that those areas remained kind of untouched. So the forensic analysis that was later done was much more effective.
Wow. And that's why we love science.
That's why we love science.
So tell me what happened when the scientists began using these technologies on Ramses III's remains.
Mm. So Ramses has been a subject of interest for a long time.
Mm.
And so in the 1960s, people used x-rays to look beneath the bandages, but they couldn't really see much detail. You see, an x-ray shows the bones as bright white and then the soft tissue is like a gray or black. But if there are wounds in the soft tissue, like this cut across the neck, they could actually miss that. And it wasn't until they started doing CT scans in the 2000s that they got a bit more detail. So a CT scan is based on an x-ray. Basically, they get an x-ray beam and they shoot it at a specimen, and then they rotate that beam around to create this like cross-sectional image, right? Or a slice. And you can look at those 2D images, or you can stack them on top of each other to create a 3D image. And that gives you way more detail.
Mm.
And so when they did these CT scans, they found something really chilling.
Mm-hmm.
This 70 millimeter long brutal cut across the throat. So the cut was through his trachea, his air pipe, his esophagus, his food pipe, and all the major blood vessels right to the bone. So absolutely brutal. And that's what I love about forensic analysis. You can have an event that happened thousands of years ago, and the only evidence of that is this dusty mummy, right?
Oh, wow.
But we can use these modern scientific techniques to figure out what might have happened. And then we almost feel ourselves in that moment when maybe he was surprised and someone brutally attacked him. And I just think that's so cool.
Right. So there was evidence of a surprise attack based on that cut on his throat, but, you know, there's some evidence that other parts of his body were missing as well. I want to learn a little bit more about that.
Yes. So there was something else that people discovered with the CT scans. Mm. His toe, the big toe on the left foot, was actually cut off.
Right.
Yeah. And it's really weird. The wound was really precise. Mm. And so they think that some sort of heavy weapon like an axe was used, right? And it just cut it clean off. And there was no evidence that the wound was healing. So it probably happened around the same time as the cut to the throat that killed him.
Wow. So I do wonder why the toe out of places,
yeah, because you wouldn't really go for the toe to kill someone, would you?
Mm.
It's not something you would do. I mean, I've seen theories that there were multiple attackers and maybe they attacked him at the same time. And, you know, maybe one got the toe and one got the neck. I mean, it's hard to say. But I forgot to mention one of the reasons why they didn't pick up the toe thing until later was that it had actually been hidden. So the toe was missing and then it had been sort of stuffed with bandages and then wax had been coated around it to create sort of almost a prosthetic toe.
Mm-hmm.
And then that had been really thickly wrapped. So everyone thought it was normal until the CT scans.
Mm, okay. Well, it took them quite a bit of time until we actually got to the point where they could do the CT scans.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm wondering. Why did it take so long for them to solve this mystery? They didn't start doing CT scans till 2009, right?
Yeah, it's really interesting because CT scans were actually invented in the 1970s, but they weren't used to study mummies for a really long time.
Mm.
It wasn't until the early 2000s that the Egyptian Mummy Project was launched at the Egyptian Institute of Antiquities.
Mm-hmm.
And they were using these modern technologies to study mummies. And this was really groundbreaking at the time. And there was a huge backlog of mummies to get through.
Mm.
So the really famous mummies went first. The first one that was scanned was Tutankhamun.
Oh,
yeah, the big celebrity.
I've heard a lot
mummy.
About him.
Yes, we will talk about him.
I'm curious. Maybe I'll ask you this another time, but there was some evidence to suggest that he had Marfan syndrome. I want to talk to you about it later. Today, Ramses the Third.
Yeah.
Sorry,
we could do a whole separate episode about Tutankhamun and all of his issues. But yes, and Ramses was still a famous mummy, but he had to wait in line until the other more famous mummies got scanned.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So CT scans helped us solve the mystery of Ramses' death. But there was something else that scientists helped us uncover. Could you tell us a little bit about this?
This is actually my favourite part of the story.
Oh, now I know it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, because it's really creepy. So there were all these prominent pharaohs in the royal cache, right?
Mm-hmm.
But lying alongside them was this wooden coffin, and it was quite anonymous. It didn't have any defining marks or features, nothing fancy.
Right.
And inside that coffin was this male mummy, and his mouth was hanging open in this scream. And
like
so,
completely open.
Completely open. If you look at photos, it is absolutely chilling.
And it looks like he's screaming.
Yes.
Oh, my
and
God.
So he became known as the screaming mummy.
I don't want to Google this.
Yeah, well, you should. My Google search is really freaky. There's like a lot of that stuff on there. I don't know. But anyway, definitely look it up later. But they were trying to figure out who the screaming mummy was.
Mm.
They thought potentially he could be related to Ramses III in some way. Mm. But I guess the more pressing question was, why was he screaming?
Mm.
The first theory could be that he was some sort of disgraced person. So normally Egyptian mummies, when they're being embalmed, their mouths are closed as a sign of respect. And because the mouth was left hanging open, maybe that meant something.
Ah.
There's another theory though, and that's something called cadaveric spasm.
Mm.
I don't know if you've ever heard of that, Aslan.
Surprisingly, I haven't.
It's a little niche. I think about it quite a lot though.
Mm. Why don't you tell us what it's about?
Okay, so it's when someone dies very suddenly and their body freezes in position. They see it in deaths that are very violent, where the victim is experiencing a lot of pain or emotion.
Mm.
So, for example, soldiers are clutching a weapon or in drowning victims, sometimes their hands will be gripping onto grasses or reeds because they're trying to pull themselves out of a river or a lake when they die.
Right.
It's really creepy.
Are these sort of like the bog bodies?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Yes, exactly. And sometimes they've seen it with people who were screaming when they died.
Right.
And their mouths are just hanging open.
Right.
And so that's a possible theory, though it's a really, really rare phenomenon and not all scientists think that it's real. And there is one last thing, and then I promise I'll stop with the screaming.
No,
theories.
I'm enjoying this quite a bit. Yeah. It is creepy, but I want to learn more
so
about
creepy.
It.
It's so creepy, yeah. So normally when Egyptian mummies are embalmed, all of the internal organs are removed, right?
Mm.
But for this one, there's no evidence of that happening. So it's possible that his internal organs were decomposing and then producing gases and liquids that force themselves out of the mouth and then leave the mouth open.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So this is actually a really common phenomenon when bodies are decomposing.
Well, I'm curious, are there other screaming mummies like this?
Yes.
Like others that are in a similar situation, their mouth is completely open and they're looking like they're in agony.
Yes, there's a female screaming mummy who, I think it was in 2024 that she was analysed properly, mm-hmm. and people were wondering why she was screaming. And it's those same theories that she was potentially disgraced, or that she had decomposing internal organs, or that she had cadaveric spasm because she was murdered.
Ooh,
yeah.
Okay.
And it's really, really cool. Okay, if you allow me, there's one more thing.
Please continue.
Okay, so there's this thing called coffin birth. Have you ever heard of it?
Never.
Okay.
And that sounds like something I want to read about, so please tell me.
Yes. Okay, so when you have a person who is decomposing,
mm-hmm.
and they're pregnant, sometimes they will give birth after they die because of all the decomposing internal organs, producing gases and liquids, the pressure inside the body goes up and the baby gets born. So, like, a lot can change with a body after death through the decomposition process.
So, Maddie, last week in our episode, which I'm sure you loved, we covered the harem conspiracy and how Queen Tia, one of the wives of Ramses III, tried to take over the kingdom by taking out her husband and putting her son, Prince Pentuer, on the throne. What I want to know is there any evidence that this screaming mummy is Prince Pentuer?
There's scientific evidence.
And that's what we're here for.
The best kind of evidence, am I right? Yeah, so there was genetic analysis done of Ramses III and this mysterious screaming mummy, and it was found that they shared 50% of their genetic material as well as a Y chromosome. So this was pretty conclusive evidence to say that they were a father and son, and this mysterious mummy was Prince Pentuer.
Ah, very interesting.
But there was another thing that was unanswered, and it was how that particular individual died. Now, the CT scan showed that there was a buildup of air in the chest and lungs, which suggested some sort of suffocation or strangulation. And there were also these odd skin folds around the neck, which showed that, you know, that might have happened as well. There was one interesting thing. There were no fractures that were found in the spine. So normally when someone hangs from a great height, they will have something called the hangman's fracture, which is a little fracture across the C2 vertebra and then a partial separation from C3. And that is what happens when the neck is forcibly extended very quickly.
Oh, so this is nasty. This is a violent neck.
Violent, yes. Mm. But in this case, there were no fractures that were found. But it's possible that the body actually only hung from a very short height. So it still could have been hung. We don't know for sure what happened.
Right.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. When they did the CT scans of Ramses III, they found something else inside, underneath the wound. And I want to know a little bit more about that. What was the purpose? And, you know, what did Egyptologists think of it?
Oh, yeah. Okay. This is really interesting. They found this strange-shaped object that was actually inside the wound on Ramses' neck. And they found out later that this was an amulet, the Eye of Horus, which is a healing symbol. And we don't know who put it there. Possibly it was the embalmers. Possibly it was someone else. But the purpose of this symbol is to promote healing.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they're acknowledging the fact that, you know, he had a pretty bad injury and he needed to heal.
So even after death, the priests tried to save him.
Yes. Well, they tried to save his body from looters and robbers, right? Mm. By moving him into the royal cache.
So he was a loved pharaoh.
Yes.
They must have been shocked that he would murder, let alone by the people of his own trusted court.
Absolutely.
Mm.
And he would have been shocked too, probably. Can you imagine someone just like coming out at you with a knife? And imagine if it was your son.
And imagine if it's one of your girls as well.
Yeah.
One of your many, many, many wives. All right, Maddie, you mentioned that Ramses wasn't the only one found down there, and the CT scans were used for a range of different mummies, right? So who else was scanned?
Okay, The most highly anticipated mummy was Tutankhamun.
Of course.
And I feel like we can't do an Egyptology-themed episode without talking about Tutankhamun. But, yeah, basically there were a lot of scans done and there was a lot of genetic analysis done as well. I would say the genetic analysis was the most interesting because it revealed a whole bunch of health issues that no one expected. So when people imagine Tutankhamun, they imagine this healthy, vital, strapping, handsome man.
Well, that's what you'd think if you had a look at any of the pictures of him in the temples and on the carvings.
Am I right? I'm actually imagining him telling the artist to be like, oh, I'll make my jaw a bit stronger or something. Yeah,
early look maxing, eh?
Yes, exactly. Because he actually had a whole bunch of health issues. So he had scoliosis, he had a cleft palate, he had club feet. He also, at the time he died, had a mild case of malaria and he had a broken leg.
See, now I'm starting to understand why, and I've heard of this before, that he might have had Marfan syndrome. So that's quite interesting.
Yes, and that's another genetic issue. And so the genetic analysis also revealed that his parents had been siblings.
Oh, right. Yes. Of course. That explains why so many genetic issues passed down.
Yes, and that, so that would have contributed to a lot of his health issues. And I guess people expected him to be this handsome, healthy person. And they were really surprised when this genetic analysis came back. And when facial reconstructions were done of Tutankhamun down the line, people were even more shocked because they could see visually what he might have looked like. And it was totally different to what they expected.
I remember seeing the reconstruction, the digital reconstruction online, and even I was shocked because I grew up watching cartoons with characters based on Tutankhamun. They'd be great pharaohs or, you know, these legendary figures, but the person I was looking at in that image seemed to be someone who wouldn't have lived a very happy life.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it was really interesting because they did the first reconstruction in 2005 and they had three teams from different countries. So it was France, Egypt and the US all doing independent reconstructions in parallel. And so the French team was basing their analysis off CT scans of the mummy and they were blinded so they didn't know who they were reconstructing until after. The Americans were using forensic anthropology analysis and the Egyptians were using their knowledge of ancient Egyptian art. And when they all came up with their different reconstructions, they did look a little bit different. And it was the French version that was chosen as the face of this project. And I remember when I was 7 years old, seeing that on the cover of National Geographic and being like, wow, that is not necessarily what I expected. Because people were expecting to be really handsome. And then they updated the reconstruction and they incorporated even more of the health issues and made his features even more asymmetrical.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they did a full body reconstruction. So they had his legs in there, the broken leg, they had the club feet, and people were just shocked. Like, people were even a little bit outraged.
Well, I understand the difficulty they were facing. These are remains from thousands of years ago. But that does make me wonder, how difficult is it to run genetic analysis on remains from 3,000 or 4,000 years ago?
It's really hard, and I can actually speak from experience.
Of course.
Yes.
We're speaking to a real expert today.
I try my best. But I used to do ancient DNA research, and my area was looking at Antarctic ice from 14,000 years ago. And we were trying to look at microbes that would have been present 14,000 years ago and work out what sort of climate and what sort of environment they were living in. And we tried to extract the DNA from the ice and then analyze it without getting that DNA damaged. So I guess I'll paint a bit of a picture for you. When we're looking at the DNA of mummies, it's really challenging. There's not much mummy DNA present and it's extremely old. It's thousands of years old. So it's quite degraded. Think of it as an instrument that's playing one little tune, but very, very quietly. And then there's all this other DNA that might be present in the sample, maybe from the priests who embalmed the mummy. It might be from looters and robbers in the cache. It might be from modern scientists who are analyzing this sample. And this DNA, there's a lot more of it and it's less degraded. So they're like multiple very loud instruments who are drowning out the signal from that mummy DNA. And as a scientist, what you have to do is isolate the mummy DNA from everything else and make sure that it's as preserved as possible. So what you need to do is you need to suit up in this like hectic hazmat looking suit. You need to put glasses on. You need to put a hair knot on. You need these like hectic gloves.
You're dressed up as Walter White.
Yeah, was, actually, but even more uncomfortable. And then what you need to do is go into a lab which has positive air pressure. So the air pressure inside is higher than outside because you don't want any air coming in carrying even more DNA from the environment.
Wow.
And then you have to spend hours, days, weeks, months extracting this DNA with all these different chemical solutions.
Mm.
And that is really, really hard to do. And they found with Tutankhamun's DNA that when they extracted it, their solution was actually black and it should have been clear. So there was all sorts of contamination. And it actually took them 6 months to get to a point when they had a clear solution that they could finally analyze.
Mm. It's crazy how much we're able to understand now just in the last few decades with these jumps in technology.
Yeah, well, imagine what we're going to be doing in 2050.
Hopefully. Hopefully we'll reach that point.
Oh, it's a little dark.
I'm joking.
Yeah.
We'll cut that out. Now, finally, Maddie, I'm wondering about the ethics about all of this. I mean, studying ancient remains is definitely really interesting to me, but we also have to consider that we're digging up people, real people that died. How do people grapple with this?
Maybe this is a bad way to answer this question, but I don't grapple with it very much.
Okay.
From my perspective,
mm-hmm.
these people have been dead and gone for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And their families and their children and their grandchildren have also been dead and gone for a very long time. And if we can create some sort of reconstruction of what an ancient person looked like or what diseases they suffered from, I think that's really interesting, and it inspires an interest in science and history among the general public, and that's a good thing, and it's worth any discomfort that could happen.
Mm.
Though I'm very open to hearing other people's perspectives on this, because I know I have a very like pro-research, pro-like let's go in and study this perspective.
Right. Would you say that you think it's justified once the living memory of these people has faded from the society they were living in? So once there are no more people that recall them, no more people that think about them, do you think it's that point at which people are justified at studying or uncovering these bodies?
Yes, I would say personal living memory.
Mm.
Because people still think and talk about King Tut
mm.
and these historical figures, right, because their influence is outsize. But their family members and their friends mm. are not around anymore. So I think it's okay personally.
Okay, I've grappled with this for ages myself. I am incredibly fascinated by anything ancient, and I'm sure anyone who's been following me is well aware of that. I love looking at Mesopotamia. I love looking at Gandhara. I love looking at ancient Egypt. But a lot of that does involve uncovering bodies and uncovering people who have passed away, often people that are simply lying in normal graves, people who have been buried by their family or died natural deaths. And so I do struggle with the idea of moving them from their resting place. But at the same time, I'm just so curious, right? I want to know what the genetics of those people were at that time, what population was living in that area at that time, right? And this technology has allowed us to learn so much and clarify so much in just the last 10 or 20 years, right? I've learned so much about South Asia. Again, my followers are well aware that I talk about South Asia a lot, but I've learned so much about the ancient remains there, all while also acknowledging that these are the remains of people who have passed away and been moved from their resting place. So I'm a bit split.
Yeah, it's, I don't know what the answer will be. And I think there is also the element of preserving remains in as good a condition as possible so that future generations can look at them. Because we think we have cool toys now, like CT scans and whatever, but I think in 2050 or 2090, there will be some really amazing technologies that we can't even imagine. And those generations might be a little bit mad if they find out that we've been disturbing remains so much and destroying samples that they might be able to get a lot more from.
They're probably going to be talking about us using this technology the way we've been talking about people painting houses with mummies or eating mummies, right?
Exactly. Yes. They'll be like those barbarians.
But that's all part of science. We got to learn. We got to develop new technology and move on and keep studying. Am I right?
You are right.
Thank you, Maddie, so much for being on the show, our favorite science journalist. And thank you so much for allowing me to learn so much more about Ramses III and his murder.
Oh, thank you. I could talk about it anytime, any day.
What are some Pharaoh feet pics you'd like to see? let us know in the comments.
What about King Tut? He had club feet.
Oh, that'd be interesting. Mm. Let's get a picture of those up.